I don't think we've said it here. Whitey then was an informant to the FBI, to John Connally.
Initially, Whitey was discovered by Paul Rico in the 60s. Paul Rico sent him away to prison for bank robbery, but he always tended to Whitey's family. So when Whitey got out, he became an informant for Paul Rico at that time. But in the 70s, when John Connally came back to Boston, and there was this arranged meeting where they two met at this oceanfront site in South Boston, and they shook hands on this agreement. Whitey's going to help me take down the La Cosa Nostra, and I'm going to protect my Irish, is what Connally said. In fact, he said that to me, too. So Whitey is giving self-serving information to Connally so he can get more lucrative criminal deals and get the mafia out of the way. It was scratching both of their backs.
So while Whitey is also committing crimes and perhaps killed people before this Roger Wheeler case, John Connally, FBI agent, was covering up for him.
Absolutely. John Connally became a criminal himself. Rico became a criminal back in his era. When it got to his finish line without getting discovered, John Connally had the same idea in mind. Although John Connally, his paychecks, they found multiple paychecks that he just threw in his desk drawer. He didn't need the money from the FBI. He was getting plenty of money through Whitey. In fact, Whitey even chastised him a couple times for buying extravagant things. I even asked the strike force attorney in Boston. I had heard John Connally bought a big house through a mobster. I really pressed that U.S. attorney about that. And, oh, no, we can't prove anything. So they knew all along that there was this stuff going on. They just didn't want to scratch the surface of it. They knew it.
Was it true then that Steve Fleming calls Paul Rico and Rico wants this to happen?
Yeah, Steve Fleming was really close to Rico. He was an informant of his also in the 60s before there was this real Whitey-Fleming connection. Whitey had gone away to prison. Stevie had gone on the run on a bombing of an attorney, and Rico had helped him get back 3 years later. So, yeah, Rico said, we really want to do this. So they put that in motion. And, you know, I think Whitey's code name to Rico was Jack from South Boston. I was ultimately able to get a bunch of stuff off Paul Rico's desk and saw some notes called Jack from South Boston and stuff. That minutia of evidential trivia that would go right past somebody else became part of building the probable cause. Probable cause is kind of like building a snowball. You get it packed tighter and tighter and tighter. And hope you get it to the end before it all melts on you.
How did you get items off Paul Rico's desk?
Well, there's some private detectives that Telex had hired to go in there early. I mean, within weeks after Wheeler's murder. They gathered up a lot of just stuff that they had no idea what they were getting. So I eventually was able to get access to that and then go back at Paul Rico and say, what's this? What's this? What's that? And then maintain that for years till it came full circle and became relevant.
It's interesting to say here that Whitey Bulger had a comfort zone when he was getting rid of people and that he was used to dealing with gang members and offing them. But when it came to legitimate people like Roger Wheeler, then it caused him to pause a little bit.
He did. In this latest book that Shelley Murphy and Kevin Cullen have written, and I don't know where they got all their information, but they refer to Whitey's characterization of the Wheeler murder as the Holy Trinity, the importance and the stature of that murder, if you will. You know, all these other guys, God bless all these dead mobsters and everybody else. I mean, nobody deserves to be murdered. But that collection alone will eventually go away. In the overall hierarchy of cold cases, they don't rank as high. But Wheeler never went away. And I think if there's any benefit of a continuity of an investigation in a police department on something as important as this, again, Wheeler was not any more important than anybody else. But what happened when this murder, it took a part of this community away. I mean, first of all, the peaceful sanctity of Tulsa, Oklahoma, Southern Hills Country Club, one of the most prestigious in the country, Telex Corporation, they fed 4,000 or 5,000 people just in their company alone. They put groceries on the table, high-paying jobs for a lot of people. That went away. This was like a bomb in this city, and people don't understand the fallout was continuing for years, literally. So what I did, and some of it is just definitely not worthy of any pat on the back, but I just nurtured this case and kept it alive for years, kept it in front of people. Go back to the early 80s. There were three channels on TV. Then one of the stations said, let's do something unique. Let's do a reality show. Well, what's that? The very first show of any of these shows that have been born and morphed through the years was a show called Unsolved Mysteries. There was a pilot for Unsolved Mysteries, and one day I'm at my desk and I get a phone call, and hey, this is John Cosgrove from Unsolved Mysteries. What? I don't know what you're talking about. So he explained this concept to me, and I said, man, that's interesting. I understand the power of TV. I can watch the same show that some guy in Los Angeles is watching while it's being watched in New York. That's pretty powerful. But I told him, you know what? This police department is conservative, stuck in the mud. We won't do this. But because you've been nice to me, I'll run this up the flagpole. And that was quite a task. Bureaucracy on its best day can kill you. On its worst day, you become an enemy. You make enemies with people by asking them to think outside the box. So it took me a couple months of this Chinese water torture to get the department. And I got to hand it to Chief Bob Dick. He had the guts to do this because Pat Wheeler even tried to stop him. She wrote a letter that was pretty accusatory saying, this is just not going to be helpful or whatever.
That would be the widow of Roger Wheeler,
yeah,
Pat Wheeler.
Yeah, that was right. Miss Wheeler. She was a widow, wonderful lady, wonderful philanthropist here in town, but very naive about this. And, you know, it's got to hurt. This destroy your family. So anyway, I kept after it, and we did this Unsolved Mysteries show. It had one of the highest viewerships in television ratings of all time. We portrayed it. And by 1985, we thought Johnny Martirano was in the mix somewhere. He looked exactly like the drawing made by the crime scene artist based on the witness interviews. And that artist is a wonderful, internationally known artist, Harvey Pratt from the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation. He has done so much good for law enforcement. Such a wonderful artist. So it's funny, years later, I'm actually spending some time, days, with Johnny Martirano in captivity. Johnny says, hey, I was on vacation in Hawaii. He says, I remember it like it was yesterday. I was sitting on the edge of the bed watching TV while I was putting on my shoes, and my woman was getting ready in the bathroom. And he said, I looked up and I saw you on television holding my picture on this Unsolved Mystery show. This is 1985. He said, I knew right then I was going to meet you someday. And my life had changed.